guys.
Hello. Welcome back to the Flake Chicks Podcast.
Woo!
I'm Allison.
I'm Jane.
We always forget to do that, Jane. We gotta remember.
I know.
The people don't know us.
especially since this time we listened.
It's time for what is probably one of the best horror films ever, and certainly one of the best Stephen King book adaptation movies ever, The Shining.
The Shining! It's my favorite movie. I was watching it, and, you know, I go through periods where I'm like, this isn't my favorite movie, and then I watch it again, and it's my favorite movie.
It's so incredibly good. It is, of course, directed by the famous Stanley Kubrick, who has directed so many amazing, amazing movies. I would definitely say, in my opinion, one of the best adaptations of Stephen King's movies. Of course, like Shawshank Redemption, Stand By Me, all really great. But this one...
Yeah, it's interesting because it doesn't follow the book very well, but it still is one of the best adaptations.
Oh, it's mwah, chef's kiss, amazing. It is...
Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss. Ugh, perfect. It's so good, and I never understand why people don't like this movie.
I don't either. I don't see a single thing wrong with it.
Me either. Like, I don't understand. People say, like, oh, it's so slow. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, the whole time I mean, if you mean by it's not packed with jump scares every 2 seconds, it's not. But it's so hypnotizing, I guess.
It's tense, and you're so engrossed in the story, and the film almost seems short because you are just so engaged the entire time.
I know, it's like staring into the abyss.
It's so true. It's the void.
It really is like the void. Like, watching Jack Torrance, I could just watch his face all day.
I could.
And be entranced.
It's Jack Nicholson's facial expressions in here are indeed hypnotizing.
Incredible. So, just a very quick, I say very quick, by that I mean like 5 minutes probably, overview of what happens in The Shining, the general plot, not the book. We're not talking about the book. The book's way different.
It's good, but it's way different.
Way different. We are talking about the film version of The Shining.
Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, not Stephen King's The Shining.
Exactly. That is the best way to distinguish them. Because there is a Shining TV series that Stephen King made. Horrible. Just so bad. especially after you watch this.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm going to watch it with my friend Sabrina.
Disgusting. It's horrible. It's abysmal. So, let's see. It starts off nuclear family. The Torrances. There's Jack, Wendy, and Danny. Danny's their child. And Jack is a struggling writer and recovering alcoholic. And they go to the Overlook Hotel, which is in Colorado. It's up in the mountains. Because Jack is applying to be the caretaker there. And essentially, he's there to interview and accept the job. So we see them driving up. They get to the hotel. They kind of start to talk about the hotel, and just kind of right away, we learn that the hotel has a pretty, like, bloody history. So it is built on a Native American burial ground, and a former caretaker, Mr. Grady, took the job, was kind of driven mad by cabin fever, and then murdered his wife and two daughters, like, chopped them up, and then killed himself. So Jack, despite this, takes the job. He thinks it will be like a really nice, like, solitary place to write. It's obviously very beautiful where they live. So he's like, it'll be a great place for me to write. And the first little bit's kind of them just going around the hotel, getting to know it. We meet the head chef. Yeah, Dick. And he kind of notices that Danny has, like, a special ability. He speaks to him telepathically, and they talk, and he basically says, like, I can do that too. Like, I have that ability. My grandma had it too. It's called, we called it The Shining.
Yeah, and so we can hear each other. You can hear things that other people can't hear.
Yeah, and he also tells him that because you have this ability, you're going to be able to see some things that normal people can't see. And he says, just ignore it. And then he tells him, don't go into room 237.
Yep.
That room is not good.
Yeah, he says that you can, people with The Shining can see things from the future. Sometimes they can see things from the past. So they understand, they can read people, they can read places to a degree that other people can't.
Yeah, so he says, don't go into room 237 and all will be good. Yep. And he says, like, don't worry, I'm going to be watching out for you. So he leaves and then begins kind of, they're alone. They're in the hotel. We spend a long time establishing that they're alone in the hotel, okay? Like, quite a bit of time.
Yes.
And then the infamous trike scene.
Oh, it's so good. The trike scene, I'd made a note about the sound in that scene.
With the carpet and the wood?
Yes.
Yes! Oh my god, it is brilliant. The, like, disturbing, how, like, grating it is.
Yeah, it's like just his wheels clacking against the wood, and then sometimes he'll go over carpet, so it's like this horrible, like,
clacking noise.
Clacking noise, and then, like, it stops. Silence. And then it starts again, and the sound is so, like, in your head almost.
Yeah, and it's not consistent. Like, it's not like, oh, clacking, 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 carpet, carpet, carpet. It's like clacking, carpet, 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 clacking, 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 carpet, clacking, carpet. Like, it's so, it's horrible.
Yeah, but it's terrible. And the shot also behind it,
a great is, tracking shot.
Yes.
Is also one of, like, the inventor of the Steadicam worked specifically with Kubrick on this film and created some new filming techniques using the Steadicam that had never been used. The Steadicam was a really new invention at that time. Ours was, like, the dolly cam.
Mm-hmm.
So this was, like, a huge thing, and to be used in horror especially. I'll talk more about this later, but why that was so important. But that was completely unheard of, a tracking shot.
Yeah, it's incredible. So we feel like we are almost walking right behind Danny as he is going around corners and stuff, and it's so harrowing because you have no idea what's going to be around every corner, and then you have the background of that sound of the trike.
Yeah, and what is one of the most interesting things I think about that scene is that the entire time we've been establishing this hotel's empty. It's empty. It's just them. It's empty. It's disconcerting because it's really large, but it's empty, and there's no one there but the Torrances. And then at one point, Danny rounds a corner. And there are two girls, and it's the infamous Shining twins, the Come Play With Us twins that everyone knows.
Yep.
And
it's terrifying.
The fuck out.
And he starts looking at them, and he can see, and he, like, the music builds, and then he sees that them chopped up, and then he'll see them standing upright again, and then he'll see them all laying on the ground bloody and chopped up again.
Yeah, so it's the first time that we see something supernatural, right?
Yes.
So, obviously he's very freaked out, but it keeps kind of going on like this, and then we start to kind of see that Jack also sees things, maybe not quite as frequently as Danny in the beginning.
But he obviously has a little bit of a shine.
Exactly. And, what I think this is a good time to talk about this. What is The Shine? Kind of interesting thing. The Shining is never really explained very much, but there are a few things we can kind of, like, gather from it. And I don't know if in Dr. Sleep it explains it more. Of course, that's, like, the 2013 sequel to The Shining, and there's going to be a 2019 movie as well. So,
following Danny, grown up.
And I know Dr. Sleep, it's about Danny and what happens to him. Basically, he becomes an alcoholic, just like his dad, and he works at a nursing
hospice
home.
Care.
Yeah, and he helps like guide people into the next realm until he meets a girl who has the Shining. So I don't know if we're going to know more about the Shining, but this is kind of what people have gathered on the Shining, which is that it's likely hereditary.
Yes, because we've established that it's hereditary for Dick.
Yeah, Dick said his grandma had it, he has it, which means it's likely that Jack maybe has it, but maybe doesn't know that he has it.
I think that that's true because he sees the girl in the bathtub.
Exactly. Also, not only that, but, okay, so there's a scene where Danny does go into room 237. We don't know what happens in that room to him, but he does come out. He's bruised. He's got bruise marks on his neck. He's sucking his thumb. He's terrified. He's disheveled. His sweater's torn. And Wendy thinks that Jack hurt him, which Jack does have a past as a domestic abuser and an alcoholic. And in fact, it was, I believe, 3 years earlier, he accidentally dislocated Danny's shoulder in like a kind of a drunken fit of rage, essentially.
The scene where she talks about how that happened is so kind of scary in such a real life way.
I know, where she's like, oh, well, you know, it was just, yeah.
Yeah, she's like making excuses for him.
Excuses for it, yeah. And it's like, he dislocated your son's shoulder.
Yeah.
But she of course thinks like, he's drinking again. He hurt him. She yells at him. He storms out and goes to the Gold Lounge, which is a bar inside the hotel that's very much closed. And he says the line, I would sell my soul for a drink right now. And a bartender is there.
Yep.
Giving him drinks. So then later, Wendy does come in. She says, oh, something happened in 237. He said there was a woman in there. Like, go check it out. And that's the terrifying bathtub scene.
Oh my gosh, like, it's so scary. This really beautiful woman, like, slowly getting out of a bathtub, and she's completely naked. And then you, like, see the entrancing face of Jack Nicholson as Jack Torrance.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes up to him, and then she, like, slowly turns into, like, an old woman who's, like, rotting.
Yeah, and what I think, oh, it's just so scary. It's so scary because you never expect what's going to happen. A lot of times, they'll show you, like, what the character sees before we see it, which is really mm-hmm. interesting because a lot of times, it's like, in horror films, it's a jump scare or you see it and the character doesn't. But here, almost every time, it's like the face of them. Like, when he rounds the corner, we see the twins for a split second, and then it's Danny. For so long, we just watch his face, and then it's flashing to them all chopped up, come back. Or, like, the scene where he sees the twins when he's playing the darts. And you just see his face, and you see him, like, go slack and get scared. And then it pans, and it's the twins.
Yes.
And it's like,
so, we see a lot of reaction shots.
Yeah, first, which is really unusual. Usually you'd see the thing first and then the reaction. But what's interesting about it is I think that works because the things you see are so genuinely actually scary. Like, they're so much worse than what you think they're going to be. And yeah, their reaction,
it's a scary movie.
It is, and it's slow. And what I think is so scary about it, too, is it's so normal. Like, every scene is so macabre. Like, even in the very beginning when he's just talking to the guy and they're just, like, casually having conversation and he's like, oh, yeah, it's built on a Native American burial ground and, oh, well, he chopped him up. Like, you gotta be careful. Like, it's, like, just shooting the breeze, but we're talking about murder.
Yeah, and it's the same way that Wendy talks about the abuse. It's, like, it's so, like, just, oh, this is normal.
Yeah, exactly. Even though it's like, okay, this isn't normal. And it kind of like sets the stage for this very dark, wrong world, like where things here are just a little bit off. Like they shouldn't be the way that they are. And also, another thing I think is really interesting, there's a documentary called Room 237. Used to be mm-hmm. on Netflix, at least not on the UK Netflix. Don't know about if it's still on the US Netflix. It's
I'm not
kind
sure.
of. It's kind of crazy, but if you can, you should give it a watch, because it is worth it if you like this movie. Mm-hmm. But they, at one point, some guy maps out the hotel according to how Danny rides around, how people walk around. And the thing is, like, even just the schematics of the hotel don't make sense. Like,
which is terrifying to think about.
Yeah, and it's like, you don't even realize it when you're watching it, but it's like subconsciously, you feel that something's wrong. Because in one scene, it'll be like Danny starts on the ground floor, and then in two more scenes, he's on the top floor.
But yeah, it doesn't make any sense
that he got up there until you start to like really look at it and you're like, okay, this is the hallway from earlier. Like it's like the hotel itself like rearranges itself like a puzzle. It never fits. And even then when you're outside of the hotel and you're looking in on it, you're like, okay, this is like completely different than how it feels inside.
Yeah. And obviously like the external shot and the internal shots are not the same place, but it's still like it still doesn't make any sense, and that gives you the feeling of impending doom.
Exactly. And just the entire film, the massive emptiness
It's also so claustrophobic at the same time.
Yeah. Well, because it's like you can't get out. You're stuck inside the hotel. Even though it's huge and it's overwhelming, it's still like this is where you are.
Yeah. And that makes it even like scarier, I think, being stuck in such a large place alone.
Alone. Yeah. It's like if you're going to be stuck, I'd rather be stuck in a room where I know nothing's happening.
Yeah.
Especially if there's like a murderer kind of thing. And then of course, basically what happens is Jack just slowly descends into madness and becomes convinced in a very infamous red bathroom scene where he's talking to Grady, who is the man he remembers being told, like, oh, you killed your wife or whatever. He says that, and Grady says, I'm not the caretaker. You're the caretaker. You've always been the caretaker. And then he tells him about Danny's ability, essentially.
That he can understand things that other people can't.
And he says, he's calling for help. And you need to correct him. And if Wendy tries to get in the way, you need to correct her too. And
yeah, so basically saying that, like, you need to keep Danny here and you can't have anyone coming for help. And if you can't do that, then you have to kill them.
Yeah. And so kill them, he tries. And then, of course, in the climax of the movie, it's the huge long chase fight with Jack and Wendy, where the baseball bat and then the axe, and here's Johnny, and then the maze. Then he dies. Yep. And then he freezes to death, and they get away. So that's The Shining. Dick does show up. He gets killed by Jack. Jack, good old, axes him to the heart.
Yep. So whenever I watch this movie with my friend who doesn't like jump scares, I told him that there were no jump scares in the movie, and I totally forgot about the scene where Jack jumps out and murders Dick.
Yeah, it's like the only one, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, there really aren't jump scares in this, but
it's so scary. It really is. Just it reminds me of Ari Aster a lot, because it's just, it never lets up.
Yeah, I think Ari Aster takes a lot from Stanley Kubrick in his directing style.
The shots are very similar. There are some shots, and especially Hereditary, where the camera is like kind of up and it's looking down a hallway, and then you see the character round a corner or something, and that's like very similar to The Shining.
Yeah, the mood of it is very similar, where it's this like very impending doom, but you can't look away kind of feeling.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about some of the interesting things that that kind of Stanley Kubrick did that were so abnormal at the time for horror.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I kind of already talked about it a little bit, but the tracking Steadicam, something that just wasn't done. And it is done a lot in this movie. I mean, from the very get-go when they're driving in the mountains and there's that incredible score that's like so disconcerting. My boyfriend always tries to play it when we're driving through the woods. I hate it so much. but he always does it. But that like tracking cam through the hills and then up, the panning, like very steady kind of things that in horror just at the time weren't happening. I mean, there were at the time there were like two rules to horror, and this is still really closely followed by a lot of mainstream horror films and amateur horror films, which is close-up shots so that the audience can't see what's happening. You want them to not know what's happening. You want it to be dark. You want it to be scary. You want them to be like, what could be out there? Think very, like, American Horror Story. Like, this is very, it's a dark setting. It's very, like, we're on their faces or we're just wide enough that we can see right in the background, but not enough. And then, of course, like, really quick cuts so that the feeling is very frantic. It feels scary. It feels like any time there could be something that jumps. And this is just not what Stanley Kubrick did at all. The entire movie almost was shot on a 18mm wide camera lens. Mm-hmm. So the shots are really, really wide, which is not only just unusual for a horror film, but unusual for any movie at the time, really.
Yeah, and it's captivating.
Yeah, and there are almost no quick cuts at all.
Everything is so purposeful.
Exactly. And something that's interesting about this film is this film took almost 2 years to film, while most
and 5 years
films,
to make.
Most films take about 2 months. So Stanley Kubrick, as you guys probably know, is infamous for being an obsessive director. Obsessive,
like taking upwards of 100 shots.
Most studios aspect, I actually looked this up once when I studied directors. Most directors take ratio to what they use is about 5 to 1 on, that's a high end. A lot is 2 to 1. They'll usually take about 2 to 5 takes of any given scene just to get some options, and then they cut it together how they like. Stanley Kubrick's ratio is about 100 to 1. So every scene, he would take about 100 takes before he picked the one that he would like. And more often than not, that was the very last take they would take. The entire Shining movie is almost entirely comprised of the last takes any of the actors did.
That is so wild.
I know. So at one point, it's like, okay, well, at least all my work got into the movie, my last take. But Stanley Kubrick would intentionally try to wear his actors down because he wanted them to feel very raw, very frantic, very upset. And, like, quite frankly, that's a really good way to do it, I guess, although probably not the most ethical way.
Yeah, like, especially Shelley Duvall in the famous baseball bat scene.
Yeah, she had to do that, what, 120 times or something?
127 times. It broke the Guinness Book of World Records at the time.
I would be pissed if I was Shelley Duvall. And not just with Shelley, too. He did it with even the child, Danny. The scene where he and Dick are talking about The Shining, they took that scene over 100 times. All the scenes with Jack Nicholson, too, had to do it. Of course, Jack Nicholson is kind of a little bit crazy, and he loved it. Jack Nicholson loved working with Stanley Kubrick. Stanley Kubrick loved working with Jack Nicholson. Of course, that's, I would say, an odd man out more than normal. He made Jack Nicholson do a lot, but Jack Nicholson loved doing it, so.
Yeah, for sure. Jack Nicholson loved playing this role.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's a career-defining role. Who wouldn't love it?
For true.
Also, one of the very interesting things about using the wide camera angle is it kind of, wide camera angles, and I bet you guys actually noticed this on the iPhone 11, if you've seen any of the memes about how they have that wide camera, how it makes things look really distorted, it makes things look a lot bigger than they are, right? You've probably seen that, like, that meme of the iPhone 11 normal photo with the banana, and then it, with the wide level and the banana's huge, and it was like, we're about to get catfished, girls, by some boys. The interesting thing about this wide angle is it makes things look a lot bigger than they actually are. So by filming with the wide angle, it made the Overlook Hotel look just overwhelmingly large, right? They look tiny in comparison to the hotel.
Which is probably how they feel.
Exactly. And there's also, it also just deeply unsettling because wide camera lenses essentially basically distort things very slightly. They stretch everything just a little bit. So there is a scene, it's a really famous kind of shot where Jack's in the freezer. He's locked in there by Wendy.
Oh, that scene.
And he's saying, like, let me out, let me out. And this is one of the only times, other than the time where Danny is bruised by the in room 237, where the hotel directly interacts with one of the characters. Most of the time, the hotel only influences characters' actions. And this, it actually directly kind of, you know, goes. It actually directly interacts with them. Exactly. It unlocks the door for Jack, but there's a scene where he's saying, unlock it, and the shot is from below him, right? So he's leaning on the door, and the camera angle is below him looking up. But what's interesting about that is that actually distorts his face just enough that he looks way more sinister than he normally would, right?
Yes, he's terrifying. You can see, like, the inside, like, his teeth.
Exactly. And also, like, Stanley Kubrick took most of these shots himself. He didn't really use his... I think he had a director of photography, but what I've read is right, he either, like, didn't use him at all or only used him for, like, 2% of the shots, and most of the time it was more for lighting things or just as another rig than it was as someone who actually took the filming. Like, most directors, they watch what happens, what's being filmed, and then they say whether or not they like it. Stanley Kubrick's actually filming the entire film almost by himself.
I think that's how Quentin Tarantino does it.
Exactly. It's very unusual because it is really time-consuming, and it's also, for the director, really a lot of work, like, to be doing yourself. But if you want it done a certain way, I guess that's the way you do it.
He's obsessive.
He's obsessive. Something else, like, just the constant suspense of this film. I think, if you've listened to any of our episodes at this point, you know that Jane and I love slow burn horror.
Yes, yes.
Like, I prefer a good slow burn horror to a good jump scare film any day of the week. I will take something that deeply unsettles me and sticks with me over something that scares me in the moment every time.
Yes, I agree. They stay with me longer.
Yeah, The Shining doesn't make me scream. It doesn't make me jump out of my seat. But it does keep, it like burns the images into my mind and just like deeply fucks me up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like scenes from Midsommar are forever ingrained in my mind the same way that scenes from The Shining are forever ingrained in my mind.
Exactly, exactly. It's like seeing something that's just truly so terrible. And personally, I always prefer Stephen King's like shows that do more of the human horror. I prefer human horror. I think like psychological kind of horror. Which I love, like, the supernatural elements that are added. I think it only serves to, like, make the human horror so much worse. But at the end of the day, like, Jack Torrance is a really fucked up guy.
He's scary.
Way before he reaches the Overlook. Like, he's already not a good person. He's abusive and he's an alcoholic. Is he insane? No. The hotel pushes that. But he's certainly not doing well.
No. He verbally and emotionally abuses his wife and physically abuses his son.
Exactly. Also, I love the hotel. Like, let's talk about the Overlook itself. Like, we've talked a little bit about how, oh, it doesn't make sense. It's huge. It's built on an Indian burial ground. But what I think is so great about this is The Shining kind of leaves it up to you. Are there even ghosts?
Or, yeah, is it really supernatural?
Or is it the hotel? Is it just their mind? Like, I think certainly it's supernatural.
I agree.
I think Danny and Wendy.
The hotel is supernatural. The hotel has a shine to it, just like Dick said.
I think so too. I think Wendy seeing that the blood and stuff at the end really proves it, seals it for me. That it's not just a hallucination because she sees nothing else the entire time
we could blame it on The Shining if it were just Jack and Danny, but since Wendy sees it, she doesn't seem to have any shine at all.
Yeah, exactly. And it's only when things start to go batshit in the climax that Wendy really sees anything.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, it's kind of like the hotel's like a Lovecraftian horror thing where it's like, are there ghosts or has the hotel held on to these horrible imprints and it uses those things as like tendrils to like get into your mind?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, the hotel really, except for those two instances we mentioned with Danny in room 237 and Jack in the freezer, the hotel never touches anyone. Because in a lot of horror movies, it's like, okay, the ghosts are hurting you, the ghosts are throwing things, the ghosts are what you have to worry about. Not in this at all. The ghosts are, like, the least amount of threat.
Yeah.
It's the way that they try and drive you insane in, like, a very purposeful way. It's like everything they do is logical, it's thought out, it's all on purpose.
Yeah, everything, I think that might be like an arm of Stanley Kubrick's directing too, because he was so just purposeful with everything he did.
Yeah. And that kind of brings us to like the, I guess like the conspiracies and the themes of this film, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, Room 237, like I said, very interesting documentary, a little off the wall. I bet you could find clips of it on YouTube.
The room was actually 217 in the Timberland Lodge, which is what the Overlook Hotel was based on.
Yes.
But it's, at the request of the hotel, they had it changed to 237 because there was not a room 237.
Yeah, which, by the way, dumbass business stuff, bitches. You know how many
you can make so much money off of that. People like me would buy that.
Oh, my God. People would spend hundreds of dollars to stay in that room. Oh my God, hundreds.
They didn't count on the horror geeks.
I guess they didn't. They thought, oh, people won't want to stay in it. And it's like, no, that's not true. People will specifically want to stay in it because of that. You could have rented out that room very special. But at the same time, I guess they didn't know it was going to become a box office hit.
And which, like, go down in history as one of the best horror movies of all time.
Yeah, which in fact, actually, it wasn't a box office hit. It actually was kind of a flop a little bit. It did way worse in the box office than, like, Alien and The Omen. But, as happens with a lot of Kubrick's movies, later on, very much appreciated.
Yes.
And widely considered now to be one of the greatest horror films of all time. Maybe one of the greatest films of all time.
Yes, it is phenomenal. It breaks so many barriers in the film and in camera work, and it really sets a precedent for horror, I think. A lot of horror movies use a lot of the same shots that Kubrick used and a lot of the same themes, like claustrophobia and that cabin fever idea.
Yeah, I mean, and Kubrick himself is like a very experimental director, always has been, so he loves to like work with different shots, which is why his movies take so goddamn long to film. Because he just wants to try stuff and try stuff and try stuff. And he wants to keep pushing and keep pushing. And at some point, you're kind of like, okay, Stanley, time to chill out. But that's why all of his movies are so wildly successful and so good and considered to be such classics. I mean, Clockwork Orange and Doctor Strangelove and what
Full
else?
Metal Jacket.
Know. Full Metal Jacket. So many good ones.
So many good ones. I have some interesting facts, if you're interested.
Yeah, I'd love to hear them.
So, the all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, which is what Jack has been That is horrifying, because throughout the entire film, we see him typing, and we think, oh, he's writing. And then when Wendy finally finds the 500-page document that is just all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy over and over and over again errors, it just shows
face,
you how
right?
unwell Jack is.
Her face in that scene where she's just like the horror coming across her face and then you see it. It's like that's the perfect example of a reaction that so fits exactly what we are about to see. And it's so much worse than we could ever imagine. And it also shows you that since the beginning, it's been getting to him subconsciously. He doesn't even like realize.
Yeah, he doesn't even realize that's happening to him. It's just seeping into him. The hotel is just like slowly just taking him.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of theories that that Jack does have the shine and that he is more susceptible to the hotel because he never learned that he had it, so he never learned what to watch out for. So it's really difficult for him to distinguish between reality and, like,
hit,
you know,
the shine.
I guess the shine. Yeah. Okay,
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. In German, it translates, there's a ton of different translations. It translates in German to don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today, which kind of makes it, like, because, like, that means you want to kill them.
No! That's scary.
The Spanish translation is, although one will rise early, it won't dawn sooner. And in Italian, it is, he who wakes up early meets a golden day.
Oh my god.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah, that's really scary. I thought all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy was scary.
Yeah. And rumors, there are rumors that Kubrick actually typed all of the pages of that because they, so he had a typewriter. He typed it. He refused to let the props people touch it. He had his own typewriter and it was like, it had a built-in memory so it can turn out the pages without an actual person. But if you look at the pages, a lot of them have misspellings and errors. And so that kind of hints at the fact that maybe Stanley Kubrick actually typed out all 500 pages of it.
Oh my good lord, Stanley, why?
Yeah.
Also, I remember, I wish I remembered this fact more, but in the documentary 237, they talk about that typewriter a lot because the typewriter actually changes.
Yes.
It's like one typewriter, and then in another scene, it's a different typewriter, like completely different, which has to be on purpose because Stanley Kubrick would never make a continuity error like that. He
never,
would reshoot
ever.
It in a second. Like, you do not take 100 takes and accidentally put the wrong typewriter in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's obviously on purpose.
Exactly. And a lot of people speculate as to why that is. There's a lot of conspiracies. Some of them are kind of crazy. We'll have to talk about the conspiracies, like the main ones. But I want more.
Nicholson, Jack Nicholson actually wrote the scene where he's berating Wendy whenever she comes in to talk to him about, like, I want to make you some sandwiches and, you know, I can read your paper. He actually wrote that scene with Stanley Kubrick.
The one where he's, like, blaming her for everything bad in his life?
Yeah.
Bitch. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a really good scene.
It is a really good scene. It's so scary in such a real type of way.
Yeah.
It's probably pretty well known that Shelley Duvall and Stanley Kubrick did not get along.
Yeah.
He obviously made her do 127 takes of that one scene. And she was exhausted. And she said she was, like, extremely ill throughout the entire process from the amount of stress that she was under.
Oh, me too. Babe, that's... Oh, my God. Poor Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, she's pretty unwell.
Yeah. I know he... Kubrick specifically cast Shelley Duvall and Jack Nicholson because they are, like, unattractive, kind of. They're very distinct looking, and he wanted them because he said, basically, like, they look kind of distorted, and they just add to, like, how messy the whole thing is, like, how messy their family is.
Yeah.
Because at the time, I mean, if you think about the actresses and actors at the time, like, a lot of them were very clean, very reserved. Kind
very
of
attractive,
acting.
And these, you know, you have Jack Nicholson's eyebrows and his forehead, and like the oh my god, the shot where he's looking out the window whenever Wendy and Danny are running out in the snow, and he's looking out the window, and his like
and
face is downturned.
Jaw.
It's like horrifying.
His hairline too. Oh my god,
it's so scary. Look. He's so scary.
Yeah, he is.
I was talking to our
Shelley
friend Abby
Duvall.
And I was like, you know, Jack Nicholson kind of seems like kind of an asshole, but his performance in The Shining is absolutely mind-blowing.
I mean, it is. And Jack Nicholson has several roles like that, in my opinion, where you're like, holy shit. Like, when he's right, he's right. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
whenever
when
he
wrong,
made One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I was like, oh my god.
Oh my god, exactly. He plays crazy like nobody's business, too. Like,
it's so true. It's so,
so
true. He does
so
it so
good.
Well.
So good. And Shelley Duvall,
she's so good in this too. She is like she is so like you feel so bad for her, but at the same time, like, she kind of annoys you the way that she kind of annoys Jack.
Miss Jack. Yeah, she is kind of annoying. Like, you can't deny that. She is kind of annoying. You kind of don't like her.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's so interesting.
It's so interesting. Did you know that the most famous fan site is run by the director of Toy Story 3?
What?
Yeah.
That's so cool. Man.
Yeah. It's man.
Man.
It's such that a came good out movie.
3 years ago yesterday, by the way. Oh, hello.
Oh, hello. Came out 3 years ago yesterday. That's so cool.
Yep. 3 years ago yesterday, the play that changed my life debuted on Broadway.
Oh, it's incredible. Go watch Oh, Hello, you guys.
Oh, my God. My absolute favorite play of all time.
Do you have a review for me?
I actually have more. I still have more to talk about.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so a couple... I have a lot more to talk about. This might be a long episode, guys. You're lucky. okay, so... Let's talk about, like, the... Okay, I think one of the main themes of this film probably is, like, the cycle of abuse and the cycle of death.
Yes.
It's present in... I believe at some point we talk about how Jack's father may have abused him, in fact, and he's an abuser. He comes to the hotel where it was built on Native American burial ground, a very, like, bloody... kind of bad thing, and then there's the murders, the Grady murders, then Jack comes in and murders, and he's said that line where, you know, he says, you're the caretaker, you've always been the caretaker.
Yeah.
That, a lot of fans, there's a really popular fan theory that Jack is actually perhaps reincarnated, and that he was always meant to come to the hotel to keep perpetuating that cycle, and that perhaps he's a reincarnated soul come to, like, kill his family. There's a kind of that question of, did they break the cycle if they got away? Which also kind of all ties back into what I think is, for a lot of people, one of the most confusing scenes of the entire movie.
Just yes, it's very so confusing. I know what you're talking about.
The very last scene where afterwards we go through the Overlook Hotel and we zoom in on a picture and it says July 4th, 1921, something ball, right?
Yes.
And
Snowball
we zoom
or something
up,
like that.
Snowball, yeah. We zoom out and it's a picture and then we zoom in and we realize Jack Torrance is in the photo.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, what the fuck? How could he possibly be in the fucking photo? So there are several fan theories on this, but I'm going to give you the two most popular. The first one is the one I just said, that Jack Torrance is actually reincarnated and that he used to be there. And maybe he was a guest. Maybe he was someone who died. Who knows? We don't know. But that he was reincarnated to come back to the hotel and continue the cycle.
Yes.
And then I think that raises a lot of questions. For one, there are, like, a bajillion history photographs in this, and I have to wonder how nobody, especially the owner of the hotel, never recognized Jack from the picture. Although, I guess there's tons and tons of photos or tons and tons of people, but he is really in the forefront of that photo, so I do kind of have questions about that.
Yeah.
But a theory that is personally, like, my favorite is that now Jack has been absorbed in the hotel.
Yeah, I like that idea. I like that he has become a part of the hotel at this point.
Yeah. And that's why he's in the photo, is because now that he's died on the hotel and he's tried to help perpetuate that circle of abuse, that he's actually been absorbed and is now a part of the hotel, which personally I really like because it kind of sticks with that idea that the hotel is like a sentient being and that it uses spirits more as like tendrils to do its bidding in the mind than it does than the spirits like are actually walking around. Like the spirits aren't really walking around. It's more like their energy is absorbed in the hotel and it uses them to like take shape. So I really do prefer the photo theory, I think. And then finally I think this is the last. Oh, I do have one fact. Apparently, this film was nominated for 2 Razzies.
Really?
Yeah, it was nominated for Worst Director and Worst Actress. So, Shelley Duvall got nominated for Worst Actress.
That's so mean.
I know. It didn't win either of them, but it was nominated, so that's sad. but especially, like, hilarious now that it's considered, like, one of the greatest films of all time. They look fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
So there are some, there are, I mean, just a million conspiracy theories about this. It is impossible to talk about them all. I was going to say you could have a whole episode, and then I was like, or you could have a whole fucking documentary, you know, dedicated to it. So if you really want to dive into really deep the conspiracy theories, everything about them, you feel free to go watch that Room 237 or get on a blog or something and read about it.
It's really interesting.
I'm just going to tell you some of the craziest and also some of what I think are the most maybe actually plausible ones.
Yeah.
One that I think is really plausible is that the theme is about genocide, which I kind of think goes along with the cycle of abuse kind of thing. There are a lot of references to genocide in this movie, specifically of the Native Americans. Of course, like we said, it's built on a Native American burial ground. There's a scene where they're in the pantry, and there are, like, a bajillion cans of this thing that has Native Americans on it. And if I remember correctly, like, they move, the, like, cans move in weird positions when they shouldn't be, which, again, like, normally I'd just say continuity error, but with Kubrick, it's kind
of... Yeah, it's not possible, really.
Yeah, it's more important. It's gotta mean something. And the word, I cannot remember what the word is, oh my god, on the can, but it means something. I needed to look into this more. Let me see. I believe it probably will come up. But also, I know there's a lot of, like, references to the, like, the year, like, or, like, 42, like, 1942, the Holocaust. Like, there's a lot of USA imagery used.
Yes.
Like, the colors red, white, and blue are used a lot, which might be kind of something about, like, how the U.S., like, kind of commits genocide a lot. Okay, here it is. It's the Calumet baking powder is the one with all the Native Americans on it.
Mm-hmm.
A Calumet is a peace pipe. Also, there are many Indian motifs that decorate the hotel, and they serve as a background in many, many, many of the scenes, which a lot of people think is saying, like, it's a curse, like, there's, like, a Native American curse on it, which is why there's so many, like, you know, so many different backgrounds are Native American themed or Native American imageries in the back.
Yeah.
It's also, a lot of people believe it's explicitly about America's general inability to admit that that the gravity of the genocide to the Native Americans. A lot of people say it's called the Overlook Hotel, like, we overlook the genocide, although it was based on something, and it was also in the book. So that one's a little more of a reach, in my opinion. But all of the key scenes with, like, or one of the key scenes takes place at the 4th of July ball. That's also the ball where Jack is, has the red bathroom scene, all of those things, which, of course, has particular relevance to the Native Americans, since that is, of course, like, the day we celebrate American independence.
When, actually, they were not independent.
Exactly. It's the basically the day we were like, this is ours. This article says, that's why Kubrick made a movie in which the American audiences see signs of Indians in almost every frame and yet never really see what the movie's about. The film's very relationship to its audience is a part of the mirror that this movie, full of mirrors, holds up to the nature of its audience. It also talks a lot about British military establishment, which itself was forged in, of course, very bloody empire building. A lot of people talk about how it is about racism, but probably one of, like, the most famous conspiracy theories is that it is Stanley Kubrick's confession that he faked the moon landing.
Yeah, yeah. Because of Danny's sweatshirt in which he has a spaceship that says USA on it.
But also, in my opinion, that could be used as, like, in the genocide thing, which I believe the genocide people do use it. But, of course, the, he's got, like, yeah, a NASA sweatshirt. There's also a monologue in which Jack talks about how, like, he can never tell Wendy things and stuff like that. And a lot of people think that that's Stanley Kubrick confessing that he, you know, did it and that he wishes he could tell people, but it's for security and, like, mm-hmm. Don't they understand that I'm doing good? Also, the carpet pattern, a lot of people think it looks a lot like a kind of a landing dock thing.
Interesting.
Right? Yeah. So, I don't know. I think a lot of people believe Stanley Kubrick faked the moon landing because 2001 Space Odyssey actually is a way better, in my opinion, reason for that. 2001 Space Odyssey is, like, incredibly accurate to what space was like before we'd even been to space.
Yeah.
But it's not like we didn't have pictures of space.
That's true.
And that we didn't have science that kind of explained what we thought space would be like, or we never would have been able to go to the moon and survive. So, in my opinion, that's a pretty whack theory. I think the thoughts on that are pretty loose. But the genocide thing, I do kind of think could be very possible.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if it's necessarily just about Native Americans. It might be more about everything, especially because there's a lot of imagery, specifically with, like, the year 1942. But like, the blood elevators, like, all of those things really, really kind of, to me, point to it. I believe it. I believe in the conspiracy, at least.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah, I think so.
There's literally, like, tons and tons and tons. I could not go through them all. Watch the documentary. It's kind of a whack job documentary, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I have my review.
Cool.
Here we go. This one's short and sweet because I didn't want to read a really long one because I knew this episode would be really long.
That's fair.
1 out of 10. A method of torturing your enemies. Just sit them down and make them watch this. Rarely have I seen a masterpiece of literature turn into a pile of horse manure. Problems. Number 1. Jack Nicholson. Hugely miscast. The descent into madness is supposed to be gradual. This Jack looked like he was already going to murder his family. I want to say, you're just saying that because he looks away. He's actually not that crazy in the beginning. He's just abusive.
Yeah. No, and I think the scene where he's talking to the guy who owns the hotel, I think he seems pretty sane.
I think he does too. He seems pretty put together. Number 2, script. Although the names and the basic plot are in place, guy goes loopy in a hotel. A lot of the scenes in the film I could not remember reading. E.g. two girls, blood in lift. Why did Kubrick drift from the book? Mostly, he didn't drift in Clockwork Orange, so why here? Plus, the characters were one-dimensional cardboard cutouts, so how could I pity them? Ah! I disagree.
I disagree as well.
This one's mean. 3. Shelley Duvall deserved to die. She was that annoying.
What? No! She was annoying, but she was good.
Also, it's supposed to be like, it makes it feel, like, weird. She's weird.
Yeah.
The Wendy in the book is a strong-willed and not a pathetic loser. The reason they went to the Overlook was to save their marriage. Which is, like, what? Also, it just doesn't really make sense. I think in the book, Jack is not an abusive person, if I remember correctly. That he's actually...
He still did
normal?
Hurt. He the reason he had to leave his teaching position was because he beat up a student.
Okay, so he is abusive.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like, I feel like if Wendy's such a strong-willed, powerful woman, why is she with a guy who's beating up students?
Yeah.
Yeah, because in the book, I remember it said he does have a, he has, like, an alcohol problem, and he has a bad temper, which is why he had to leave his job in the first, in this one, too.
Yeah.
The ending. Jack did not freeze to death in the snow. In the book, it showed that Jack was human enough to recognize his love for his son. The frozen scene here left me with a feeling of disgust that the pinnacle of the book had replaced for a cheap shock. And then this says, watch the TV series instead, but read the book first. The TV series is such trash. Literally, do not give it the time of day unless you're, like, really into The Shining. Also, I think what's interesting about it is, like, he does go completely crazy. That's what's scary.
Yeah, he completely does.
If he comes to his senses, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. What would you give it? Oh my god, 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10.
It is amazing. And it's so, I could watch it a million times in a row and never get bored. There's always something to look at. No,
I could watch it forever. I could watch it forever.
There's always something to look at. This movie, gonna live on through the ages.
It's true.
It's incredible.
It is. Go watch it if you haven't.
Oh my god. Well, if you, we just spoiled the entire thing for you, so hopefully you've seen it. But, oh my god, like, if you go show it to a friend, go. It is a Halloween movie must see.
It is.
It's a horror movie must see. It's a movie must see.
It's so it's true. Everything, it covers all the bases.
It is a great piece of cinema. Stanley Kubrick, although crazy, is a genius.
It's true.
We have to give him that.
We do.
He's obsessive, and not a lot of film directors are as obsessive as Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm tired. All right.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
Yes, thank you. Next week, what is it? We're doing the Vitch?
Vitch.
All right, so Vitch next week. So watch that for next week, and then we'll be back.
Then we'll be back.
What might be Jane and I's
most divisive episode
yet.
I don't know. She hasn't rewatched it yet, so I think that she's going to like it more on the rewatch, but I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not so sure.
Okay.
But, hey, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
All right, guys. All right. Follow us on social media.
Yes, please. And please leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps. And then please, if you want more content, please go to our Patreon. This week, we're going to be talking about mental health and sexuality in TV shows. So if you want to hear that, if you want to hear us really dive deep into some really fun TV shows, please donate just $1 a month. You can get access to those episodes.
Yep. Thanks, guys. All right. Bye.
Bye.